Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Oi! The boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and, frankly, appalling language. And sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature. So keep the volume down if there are kiddies around. And thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to This Just In on Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Even know what a rabbit is, do you?
No, I don't. But they do it. And they're someone writing it off.
Someone on our, we did have a review this weekend, and it was referring to our friends at Seinfeld because it said Spongeworthy. That was what? 5 stars, Spongeworthy.
Well, so we were Spongeworthy. It is a weird show today, isn't it? All things considered. The news that dropped over the weekend regarding our little project here.
Yeah,
it's sad. And its future, or lack thereof. Things were said, apparently. Things are said.
Did I cross the line?
Maybe.
Did you cross the line? You started it.
Yeah, but you definitely finished it.
Yeah.
It was going one direction.
From when? <That's...
laughs> Yeah, but you were mentioned. You're the
this
one being mentioned.
This is why we're in trouble, Dubs.
You're the one being comments. Mentioned in the lawsuit. Not us. It's you. But as such, there'll be a brief hiatus, probably forever, of the podcast moving forward. This will be the last one while we wrangle with our legal issues. What can I say? You know, we're edgy. I thought we were edgy. Sometimes we crossed the line. On this occasion, from a legal libelous standpoint, we did. Well, one person did. And as such, we'll be back at some point, maybe under a different guise. Most of us, one probably won't be. But it's been fun, hasn't it, everyone? Right? Did you enjoy the last 4 years, JC, Craig, Wanger?
Spectacular.
No.
No. Are you the reason for the lawsuit? Are you the person behind it, JC? Is that what it is?
I told you, don't do it.
No, you know what? Sometimes, I know. It sucks. Oh, well, that's what it is, I guess. Modern cancel culture, right? And now we're part of it.
So it's our last show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll relaunch one day under a different name. But
Fouté Prime. It's a French side of us.
Like witch-a woman.
I'll miss your faces 7 times a week anyway, that's for sure. Or it's an April Fool's joke.
Huh? Yay. You woke up so excited about that, eh?
I did.
Sent it out. Hey, Drillsies. And I was reading it going, what is he fucking talking about? It took me a bit.
Yeah, because you were the joke ruiner.
Yeah,
on
I know.
Twitter. I was like, what the fuck, Wanger?
Within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm scared of lawsuits, guys. If they're coming after, we did have a show that was off the rails on Friday.
No, you did.
Because of?
I drank too much. I was in bed in Montreal at a hotel by 9:30 on Friday night. Slept 10 hours. It was spectacular.
There were some good responses, though, to the tweet this morning. One person, though, and I think it was serious, just said good. And I think I won't mention their name because I think they've been a problem in the past. Mm. I think they don't like us very much. I think I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, then I do apologize. I don't generally remember the idiots. But they say good. So joke's on you. We ain't going anywhere. Anyway, it's Footy Prime. It's a podcast. It's Monday. This just in. Jimmy's here. JC's here. Craig's here. Wonger, Dubs, and me, Shams. Shall we get to the Kevin Blue statement later in the show? And we'll start with some games. Obviously, big games across the UK, across Europe this past weekend. So let's start with the matches. All right. And then we'll get to that statement by Kevin Blue later in the show today. The big game, of course, coming on Sunday, Man City 0, Arsenal 0, anti-climax, wasn't it? Jesus Christ. But, Dubs, does that change your opinion of Arsenal a little bit, given how they did enter that match and how they left that match with an important point, let's be honest? You're muted. And infected.
Right. Sorry about that. As a courtesy for all of our listeners, for my hacking and nose blowing. So
you sound worse than Friday, Dubs.
I know.
Wow, I know. It's really hit you hard, huh?
Yeah. But I think I'm on the upswing now. We'll see.
This is fragile, Dubs. It is a little fragile, Dubs. Eh, with that voice.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of Demi Moore.
Oh. Yeah, I like that.
Ain't a bad thing. Not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
or Phoebe when she's sick and then she makes all the money,
right?
Singing her songs.
We did this like 6 months ago.
Do it again.
Is it?
Sing it for us.
What is the line again? My
stinky shoes.
My laugh is even worse. It sounds like I smoked like 3 packs a day. Okay, so to your question, I think that unlike last year, Arsenal go into the Etihad and they're unafraid. They're willing to kind of hang with City, and they do. They kind of cancel one another out. But I'm going to steer it back to Liverpool because Klopp was asked, what do you hope in terms of the outcome of this match? And he says, I hope they both lose. And in a way, they both did because Liverpool won. That's 26 points that they get. And then we're going to get back into the Liverpool game, but we're going to go get into it. That's 26 points from a losing position for Liverpool so far this season. And that's the first time that City, I think, have conceded since their game against Crystal Palace in 2021 at the Etihad.
At home. Yeah. 58 games.
That they haven't scored at home. Mm. So, I mean, you have to give credit to Arsenal. You knew it was going to be kind of a tactical battle between Pep and Arteta. And I think that's what you got. But I think, and Craig, you have pointed to this time and time again, and I'm going to steal it, but how key Declan Rice was in insulating that back line. I mean, the big talking point is going to be, I mean, you saw them after the game. God, my brain. The two big defenders for Arsenal.
Saliba
and Gabriel and Haaland after the game, like going at it, looking like they were going to fight. And
that was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then, you know, finally embracing, but then still kind of going after one another and like claiming one said something and the other didn't. And Grealish kind of getting involved and Pep pushing him away. But you have to point to how resilient they were defensively. And they really didn't give opportunities to Haaland. He didn't get those 1v1 kind of break wide open opportunities that he seems to get every game. And he did have that one that kind of dropped to him off the corner and he just mishit it. He wasn't able to get onto it. But I don't think you saw both teams fully express themselves in a way that you would hope. You know, I think usually these games, I'm not saying that they leave you wanting, but I think they effectively neutralized the threats. You know, you didn't see the big grade A opportunities on either side. So I think that was a little bit of a disappointment. But again, as a Liverpool fan, I was kind of pleased to see they play to a stalemate.
Yeah, Craig, is it a demonstration of the evolution of Arsenal that, okay, they're not at the point now where they can go at City at the Etihad? That's kind of foolish. But they're not going to crumble, and they're going to sit deep, and they're going to absorb, and they're going to play hard, tenacious football and grind out a point. That, to me, is a big step forward for this team.
That's what they were missing for years. For years, like, everybody talked about that, the lack of grit and ability to grind out results and do it when it really mattered. And like Jamie said about Declan Rice, I think he was the addition that everybody talks about. I know West Ham fans are saying they got him for a snip at $100 million. They should have paid $200 million, because I tell you, the difference that he's brought to that team is massive that we've seen. I would put it up in the lines of what Van Dijk and Alisson did when they came into the Liverpool lineup.
That's a great point. Maybe we'll look back on that signing and say that was the moment, right? The tipping point for Arsenal. That said, Jimmy, it's City, right? They can still win every game now and still win the championship, although Pep says that, is out of our hands now. So I'm sure he loves saying that, taking the pressure off his own team and putting it on Liverpool, who he says now are now favourites. Sorry, JC's just popped up, George Foreman behind him there. I love that. Sorry, I get distracted easily. It's a big shiny thing over there. Look. But yeah, Jimmy, so City, okay, so they're in third place, still very much in contention. One stat that stood out to me was it's just the 11th time in Pep Guardiola's 459 competitive matches in charge that City have had one shot on target or fewer in a game. Is that on Arsenal or is that on City?
Well, going back to your first comment about Pep and saying the pressure's not on us, now you start coming towards the end of the season. This is all the mind games start now. And all the mind games are going to be leaning towards Liverpool, because everybody wants to put the pressure on Liverpool now because they're top of the table. They need them to mess up a little bit and drop some points so that they can leapfrog them. So you understand what Pep's doing now. Everybody's going to start playing that game. And then I think with Arsenal and Man City, with a game like that, you know, there's always big expectations. And they go, you know, people think, oh, there's going to be lots of goals. But again, when you come to this point of the season as well, nobody wants to give an inch. And it becomes a little bit conservative at times where both teams end up canceling each other out. And that's what you saw in that Man City-Arsenal match, where both teams, they were at it. They didn't want to give an inch. They didn't want to make mistakes, because you can't afford to now because there's too much at stake. And it becomes a little bit disappointing, doesn't it? It's not like beginning of the season where the games open up a little bit and both teams are at it. And now it's more or less where both teams really have studied each other. They know exactly what they're going to do, the movements, the players. And it becomes a bit of a stalemate and boring at times. But that's what you get at the end of the season when big clubs have a lot to play for.
I found it was an intriguing game, though. Like, yeah. Even though it was nil-nil, because there was so much at stake that one goal could actually make such a massive difference at this point of the season.
Yeah.
I did, though, find, to your question, Sharms, that, you know, a criticism that you could levy at Arsenal is that they parked the bus. Is that, you know, Raya was playing long more so than in any other game that they played, right? That's by design. That's to protect themselves. Yeah. But City was also largely without threat. You saw Foden not influence the game. You saw De Bruyne, who's been absolutely masterful since that return from the hamstring injury, not really able to unlock the defense. You saw Pep with the dual substitution of Doku and Grealish, and you think, okay, this is where Pep really excels. He's seen something in the match. He puts Doku on the right. He puts Grealish on the left. You think, okay, this is going to be it. And I thought that Bernardo Silva was probably the most successful in kind of getting in those little pockets, either by dribble or finding little slip passes through. But then that final pass, that final action just kept eluding them. And then you saw Pep at the end of the game really demonstrative with Grealish talking about a particular instance, and Grealish is kind of listening to him. So obviously Pep saw something and it didn't quite ever come to fruition. And you thought with the insertion of those two, I mean, I don't know if there's two livelier ball carriers in the game, and then he's got two of them at his disposal, Pep does, and then they're unable to turn the game in their favor. So I think it's both things, as it often is. It's City looking relatively flat, especially in that penalty area. They were unable to kind of attack the box. Any crosses that came in never really looked threatening, never really put Raya under pressure, never put it into that kind of corridor of uncertainty, never really put, you know, the center backs who did so well to control Haaland, never put them under too much pressure. But it's also full credit to Arsenal for all the things that we've listed. So, you know, you're seeing now, and I mean, City probably will go on to win all the rest of the games, but you're seeing an Arsenal side who's grown since last year, who themselves are saying, we can grab this now. This is ours and we can hang with these guys. And I mean, did they produce a whole lot going the other way? No, not necessarily, but I mean, they did catch them on a break a number of times. And then the beginning of the game and the way that they managed that onslaught and how high up City had their fullbacks and how Arsenal really dealt with that pressure early on. I thought that is a sign that Arsenal themselves have matured and that they're potentially on their way, not necessarily to a title, but like, to showing that they can totally hang with the City or the team of City stature.
Why are you guys laughing? Yeah. Why are you laughing?
Because of Forrest, we can just see his crotch in the frame.
No. He stands up while Dubs is making some amazing points. He stands up and all we got is Craig's package, his lunch kit, staring at us because it's at camera height.
Just to clarify, though, he's wearing pants for maybe the first time today on this podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it okay? This is insane, right? But I think a lot of people will agree with this, that the goal scoring leader of the Premier League is having a disappointing season. Erling Haaland, 18 goals in the campaign, right? Brilliant. But don't you think he's a bit disappointing so far, given to what we expected before the season, given what we saw last season? Jimmy?
Well, I think what happens, Sharms, is that when he first came into the Premier League, people didn't realize how big he was, how powerful he was, how good he was in the air. And then as defenders, what you end up doing, you start studying that player even more now. And you watch all his attributes, his movements. And then they start making it very, very difficult for him, which means that he, in turn now, has to start changing his game. Because it's that cat and mouse sort of thing. If I'm playing against him, I'm going to make sure I don't give him nothing. I know his movements. I know his runs. I know his patterns. I know, okay, as soon as Silva gets a ball, he's going to run into this channel. I've got to go with him. So players start studying individuals that you're playing against. And then they end up making it difficult. So now he's going to have to change his little game again. And his usual habits and tendencies, he's got to alter them a little bit now to give himself a bit more of a chance in and around that box.
Do you feel vindicated, Jimmy, a little bit now, given your prediction before last season when you said, what is it, 11 goals? And we all laughed and scoffed at you.
It was 15.
15, okay. And we all scoffed and said, whatever, Jimmy. And you were proven wrong last season. But now, yeah, looking forward to this season, you're not that far off.
Right. And I said, once the players figure him out and study him, it's going to be very difficult for this guy.
Wait, hang on a second. He's almost doubled Jimmy's prediction of two seasons ago. What are we grasping
It took the players a while to figure him out.
This is like the participation medal for Jimmy from the Canada Fitness Awards.
No,
we gave him a ribbon.
I think it was two years ago. I think there's something to it. I think he kind of... he jumped the gun a little bit early, perhaps, in his prediction. But then everything's now settled down in the league. And like you said, they figured him out. He's not that far off. We should take back the scoffing and mockery of much of last season now.
No.
Apologies accepted.
Jimmy and Dubs, are there... I was in Montreal at that McGill football banquet, and we were talking about preparation because we used to spend hours doing film. Defensive backs and linebackers would have to go up at around 4 p.m. every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday for film sessions. Did you guys do positional film? Do you do team film? How was it broken down as far as national teams and professionally? Jimmy?
We watched a lot of tape. And it'd be individual, more or less who I was playing against. If I was playing, you know, left wing, it'd be the right back. What's his tendencies? How do I get advantage of him? If I was playing at a wing back position, then I'd be looking at their right side, what they do. And we have a lot of tape where we'd sit down with one of the coaches and just go through it.
So it could be completely individually, like you. Yeah.
A lot of times we would do team, team, and then we'd do individual. And then you would sit there and you just watch all the tendencies. When the midfielder gets the ball, the right winger pushes up high. He wants to come across as soon as this player gets the ball. And so then you're just constantly studying that player and that individual and watching all of his movements. And with the national team, it was pretty similar as well at times. We would go through a lot of tape. We'd watch their attacking tendencies, their defensive tendencies, their set plays. And then you'd go break it down into individual players that you were up and that you were playing against, because that on the pitch and on match day, that's your individual battle. My individual battle is with the guy that I'm marking, that I'm playing against, and I can't let him get advantage of me. So we would watch loads and loads of tapes.
Dubs.
Yeah, very similar. Except we'd also have like to the individual stuff, and then also the potential matchups, what you're looking for from an individual standpoint in terms of, you know, tendencies in their play. But then also from a team standpoint, there'd also be team parts. So you'd have like the defense or the back line would meet with the goalkeeper and the goalkeeper coaches. The midfield would meet. And then, or as a defensive midfielder, I would sometimes sit in on that defensive meeting. And then the strikers would usually have a meeting as well.
Good answer. I'm going to give that a 7. And Jimmy, you get a 9.
Flashy four.
But I just wanted to come back to the city thing and Holland, not to throw Jimmy under the bus, but I just think that Holland's performance, you could say it was a microcosm of City's performance, because there's usually a sense of inevitability about Holland, where if he hasn't scored, you just sense that it's coming because of the impending threat, because of just the way that he operates off of shoulders, the way that he kind of lurks. He just that presence is always there. And City, by default and in their collective is also that way, where there's just, it just seems inevitable that they're going to wear you down and they're going to create something if they haven't found it through a number of different avenues. Well, they're going to sort it out either through Pep's tactical guile, or they're going to find it out through the personnel on the pitch. And they just weren't able to find their way onto the score sheet. So I think that's the first time I think I've seen them inept in a way. But you have to give full credit to Arsenal and the way that they kind of stood their ground and didn't let themselves be overrun.
Do you know when, if I asked you guys a question, if I said, okay, who's in control of the match? The team that's defending or the team with the ball?
I think more often you'd tend to say the team who's in possession.
So for me, it's the team that's defending. The team that's defending is in control. Because my movement and the way that I set up, I can dictate where that ball's going to go. If Amy's got the ball and I'm to the left of her, she's only going to go one way. So I can dictate where that movement's going. So Arsenal were in control. And it's up to City to try to break them down. And what they're doing with their passing and movement, they're trying to find a defender that's going to make a mistake. And they couldn't. Mm-hmm. That's how you've got to give so much credit to Arsenal, because their defending, their movement, how they shift, they made Man City shift that ball. They were in control. Mm-hmm. And they came over with the result. For me, the defending team is the one that's in control, and they were absolutely superb. And that's why Man City, they didn't have the answers. They couldn't break them down. Now they can keep possession all day long, do whatever you like, but one shot, Arsenal's in control.
I love how it's a case of the arguably the best centre-back in the Premier League in Saliba up against arguably the best number 9 in the Prem in Haaland, and that battle and how it did go post-whistle.
Yeah.
Those kind of battles I just love. I think they're so good for the game. Two just physical specimens too, right? And yeah, it was, I guess, I wouldn't say compelling game. It was, like you said, it was every touch counted, right? And it was a lot of tension. A chess match, yeah. Yeah, too. Mm-hmm. And again, Arteta's learned so much too, right? It is the old, as they said a million times in the broadcast, that the master and student.
Yeah, I wouldn't use compelling either, but in Forrest, did you use intriguing? You used a good word earlier to describe it. I think a lot of teams in the Prem are going to be watching that, and outside the league as well, to see how did Arsenal execute it? How are they able to do it? Because there was a certain stubbornness with every single one of those players positionally, but also collectively, almost like a fuck you guys. Like you're not going to get past us. And you have to admire them for that.
Getting a clean sheet against City is a it's an achievement in itself.
Yeah. It could be that this year isn't the year for Arsenal still. But I think at this point, there's enough progress being made this season to give fans a lot of hope. It's not like previous years where they – and listen, they could still crumble, of course. But at this point, you don't see that happening. So it could be that City pip them or Liverpool pip them to the title. But I think if you're an Arsenal fan, you're still pretty happy and saying, okay, we see this direction. We can definitely get over that mountaintop in the next few years with the signings like a Declan Rice, for example. So it makes it for just an intriguing end to the season, for sure.
It's going to be a great end of the season.
Well, I mean, talk about two contrasting matches, right? The early one, Liverpool against Brighton. What a game that was. It was just, and it's what you expect from De Zerbi and Klopp. But thoroughly enjoyable. And like you said, Liverpool came back from behind. Most points from losing positions, I think, in the league this season. Salah had the most ever shots in a match for him in 11 shots. 11. I mean, I don't know if he had a good game or not. He had chances. Usually he'd put some more than just one away. But he got the important goal, right? So how would you rate his performance, Greg?
Involved.
Yeah. Bang. That's he it. Scampers. I love that. I love that. I'm giving you some time here. I love that when you see that wide angle, though, when they're on the counter and you see the wide angle, no one looks more like a computer game character than Mo Salah. He's those little legs flying down the field there. No, anyone else want to add anything to that game?
I didn't see the game.
Oh, okay. There we go. See,
this makes more sense now.
I was getting myself out of my shitty apartment.
Your shitty apartment. Your brevity explained.
For those who don't know, Craig's homeless right now. His apartment was flooded with sewage.
Mm. Feces on the couch, and not your normal feces on the couch. Other people's. No.
Other people.
Is there such thing as normal feces on the couch? Oh, yeah,
absolutely. No. You have kids. You know what it's like.
I do, but that's still not normalized.
You don't want to do a blue light in your house, Dubs. You'll be very surprised at what's all over the place.
I'm still fairly confident that there's
you no live feces with three men. Jimmy knows better. Yeah.
I'm going to side with Dubs here. I mean, I don't care if you have kids or not. If you've got regular feces on the couch...
We're qualifying it as regular feces.
I should use the scientific term. Common feces.
Common feces. Yeah. Not diseased. Same DNA feces.
Common feces.
It's all knitted really together, funny. The same DNA.
Well, I know one thing. I'm not sitting on your couch, Wonger.
Seriously. It's too late. You've slept on it and sat on it.
Right. Wonger needs the plastic over the couch in the parlor room, right? Yes. But out of necessity, not
the
because
Italian grandmother.
It's the fancy room. Funny, JP's mom, being from Glasgow, refers to people sometimes, I mean, I guess in a disparaging way or an insulting way, as common. Like she doesn't want to ever look common, you know? So I wonder if that's to do with feces as well.
Yeah, covered in shit.
Common feces. Yeah.
That's what the insurance company is trying to say.
What the hell are we talking about?
Yeah. Remember they used to have those at the bar? You'd have those communal bowls of nuts or pretzels.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing a show when they actually took one of those bowls and studied it under a microscope and all the feces spores in that from people going to the washroom, not washing their hands, coming back, reaching into that bowl, having a couple of salted peanuts, and then someone else comes along. No, I think it must be banned, right? Probably health and safety or something.
And that's in scientific lang, that's what common feces is.
Okay, but that's a communal bar with a bowl of peanuts, not your domestic couch.
Common feces travel well.
Domestic couch.
Sorry, yeah, Liverpool. Sorry, Dubs. You watched the game, right?
I did.
Hey, hands up, who watched the game? Okay, me and Dubs having a conversation right now. Okay. The only ones that saw the game. All right, you take it away.
Okay, so I found myself being a little bit frustrated with, I mean, as well as Liverpool kind of came on and as well as that midfield did. I think early on, people were impressed with Szoboszlai. And then later Endo, and I still like them both, Endo more so than Szoboszlai, but McAllister is just playing so, so, so well, right? Like for me, he was by far and away the best player on that pitch. But back to Salah. So I think you see Bradley pushing really, really high, like he's bombing on, right? And so he's occupying the space in that right channel, which sends Salah more inside where I think he's less effective. Like, I want to see him camped out on that right touchline and then kind of coming in, and then he can either slice inside or he can take a player on towards the byline and then pass it or cross it back in. And then I also thought that, that Nunez had kind of a muted performance. He wasn't really as involved, wasn't as influential as you would have liked. But I thought Diaz was really active. I thought he was really lively on the ball. But again, I think that was the way that they kind of set up, where it was almost like overly crowded in the middle of the pitch where they were almost getting in each other's way. But anyway, I think that the way that's, that Liverpool were able to dominate the middle of the pitch, and it was quite a physical contest as well. And I just love the way that that McAllister and Endo kind of dictate the play, and Endo kind of chopping things up, breaking up the play, getting yellow cards. Like, he just really dictates things, not only in terms of like finding that outlet, finding McAllister a little bit higher up the pitch, but imposing himself physically, which I think Liverpool needed as a way to kind of get themselves back into the game. Cause you saw them come out to start that second half, kind of the side that you expected to see from the opening whistle. Cause I think that first 45 was a little bit of a letdown for me from their perspective in terms of the standards they'd normally set.
Endo's been a really nice signing. And don't forget, he was second or third choice. They tried to get a Casado, who went to Chelsea in the end. And then, oh, I forget the guy's name, guy from, wasn't Southampton. Was it Southampton? Maybe. I forget the midfielder, and they couldn't get him either. So they, in the end, end of the window, bit of a panic move, but they get Endo. Mm-hmm. And it's been just exactly as advertised. But I'm still curious as to why you prefer him over Szoboszlai, who I think is brilliant. He's been a bit patchy in recent weeks, but I think he's at his best, though. He's amazing. His vision and his range of passing.
I sometimes find him to be not as, as mobile as I would like, but I thought that he played a good game against Brighton. I think that I particularly liked him without the ball, which sounds silly, because he does have a way of controlling the game and like having the freedom to receive the ball a little bit higher up the pitch. He can pull the strings, but he was the one who was applying the pressure defensively oftentimes, and I did like that aspect of the game that you don't always see. But I find him frustrating at times. I don't know why, but I just think like you do see what he's capable of, and then he's unable to kind of replicate that, I think, consistently. And that's where, for me, he lets me down.
Still three points, right? Big 3 points for them. And they're playing, I think it's the Blades on Thursday. Big full week of Premier League action in the Prem, midweek action. So you'd assume 3 points there. And we're getting down to the crunch now, so it should be very interesting. United tied Brentford 1-1. Did you hear Ten Hag's comments post-match? He says, we should show more passion and desire in many moments in the game. And then he says, we didn't play well, but there was spirit. There was fight. What the fuck are you saying? Like, make your mind up. Are you criticizing the effort? Are you commending it? All these mixed messages from Erik Ten Hag. Still, they weren't good in this game. Brentford, I think, deservedly should have won that game. They got a point. Tony had a number of chances. Hands up who watched that game. Hey, JC. Man, we're busy people this weekend, in fairness, right? A lot of family stuff going on, floods, flus. So I understand why we haven't watched all the games for
common feces.
I watched Forest and Palace.
Okay, well, we'll get to that next. Okay,
yeah, I'm waiting.
JC, on JC's thoughts on the Man U Brentford game.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things I can say. Well, biggest one I take, you know, so basically,
yeah.
Et cetera.
No, thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah.
It's good. JC.
Everybody watched Newcastle, West Ham, no?
I didn't see that one, actually, no. So you want to talk about that one? Okay. Hands Forrest, up if you saw West Ham, Newcastle.
Oh, of course, I didn't watch that one either.
I actually, you have no idea what I've been dealing with. One.
My place is a disaster.
He's literally swimming in common shit.
Yeah.
I watched a bit of that one, but I had 104 degree temperature, so I was kind of drifting in and out of that one.
Did you like, do you think you had like hallucinations?
Yeah.
Make something up. What do you see in that game?
I thought Jimmy looked great on the left flank in that game. That's it.
Oh, Jimmy, speak. You saw it.
I saw bits of it.
Okay. Which bits you want about?
More towards the end.
I did.
Oh, you did?
And I made money off it.
Oh, did he? So, what was your money on?
I did. Yeah. So, well, here's the thing. And I felt bad because I felt awful because I don't like to go against our former teams. But I saw it's Newcastle at home to me is a – they were at home, yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Newcastle was at
home. So, yeah, Newcastle at home. The Newcastle fans to me always seem like pretty ruthless. And just – I saw that, you know, West Ham was up. I'm like, you know what? I feel like Newcastle's going to come back. And they did. So I put money on it. And then I won money. So, Tony Bett, thanks a lot.
All right.
Went me that 20 buckaroos.
No, but the finish was good because West Ham, or actually Newcastle scored early, went up 1-0, and then West Ham came back and it was 3-1, and then Newcastle got a penalty, I think, in the 70th odd minute, and then Barnes got two goals in the dying minutes of the match. The place went, St. James Park went mental. Mm-hmm.
And Harvey Barnes came on.
That's right. He scored in the 83rd, and then I think he scored in the 93rd minute or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But it's so one of those penalties again. You saw it in MLS with Kokoro a couple weeks ago in Chicago, where he's just able to get himself kind of cynical, like in front of the player, and when they're just trying to clear the ball out of the box, and that's what Gordon just gets position on. Christ, what's the player again that came over from Calvin Phillips? Yeah. And he's trying to clear the ball out of the box, and then Gordon just gets his foot in the way. And then it's called a penalty, and it's unjust as a player. You'd be like, what am I meant to do? But I mean, Gordon kind of gets in there and he earns himself a penalty. So I think Forrest, you're probably West Ham. You're feeling a bit hard done by there, but that's the way that those penalties are being called now.
Yeah. Both of them really.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a potential offside before the penalty decision was actually even given that they didn't seem to go back far enough to see.
Yeah.
Well, it shows
there's a lot of criticism out there on David Moyes again, but I have to feel that there is a little bit of injust to that match as far as getting something from it.
Chelsea
on, Phillips, come on! That substitution was not a good substitution by all accounts. A lot of people saw it as negative, but then at the same time, if you're bringing Antonio off, who are you going to bring on? In this place, like Danny Ings, so I think it's a difficult decision for the manager, and I think he's taken heat for it, which I think is a little bit out of order, to be honest with you.
Mind you, I'd bring on Danny Ings, wouldn't you?
Pardon me?
I'd bring on Danny Ings, wouldn't you? I mean, he's not having a great season, but he's a proven goal scorer.
Mm-hmm. But in that situation, at 3-1 up,
right. Right. He'll get hammered no matter what, David Moyes, right? Just simply because they don't play the West Ham way.
No pun intended.
And Phillips, apparently, there's a clip of him giving the middle finger to apparently West Ham fans getting on the bus that were giving him a bad time. It's amazing how the fans, you know, they can rip players, personal attacks on players, and then one guy gives a finger to somebody and it's like, oh my god, there's children around.
It's so true, isn't it? Yeah, you see the language directed towards Calvin Phillips. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't respond though. God forbid, right? brutal.
The guy must have been feeling absolutely crap after the game, Phillips, because it didn't go well for him.
Move on. He's his last. If he could rewind and start the last 2 years of his life again, I'm sure he would, and it'd probably stay at Leeds because it's all gone downhill from there, isn't it? Really sad.
Yeah, I kind of feel badly for him.
So do I.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just seems like
the devil, you know.
Yeah, it's so true. You know, when you think about it, right? Like, we all play the game to win trophies, right? And he was at Leeds, and he was absolutely on fire, running the show there. He was a legend. They loved him. Goes to Man City, doesn't play much, but wins a Premier League, Champions League, gets all these trophies. And I'm sure he's looking at that trophy cabinet, but then at the same time, in the back of his mind, he's going, I didn't really play that much. Did I really kind of earn this? And now I'm at West Ham. I'm already getting booed. He must be looking back now at his career, and you're right, thinking, why the fuck did I leave Leeds?
I've always thought that about people that win trophies, but they don't play a significant part. And you see them in the post-game celebrations enjoying themselves, you know, popping the champagne. And I get that you're part of the team and it goes to training. You're part of the group. I get all that. But it has to be a little bit of you that says, meh, well, you know, I kind of feel a bit of imposter syndrome here. I'm not quite the player I should be, you know, and I didn't really contribute that much. Or am I just not given the team concept enough credit here?
I mean, look, you're there every day training. I mean, goalkeepers are completely different, right? Because they work with each other all season. They push each other. It's different. Where outfield players, you know, it's you're there, you're training, but then if you're not playing on a Saturday and you only play maybe a couple of games and the team goes on and wins the league, you're like, fuck, I didn't really play too much of a role apart from training.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, for a title back in the day, certainly in the 90s, to get an actual medal, you used to have to play like 15 games of at least of the season. Otherwise, you're not even getting a medal.
Do they still do that?
I think so. I think it's still the case, isn't it? Appearances?
I think so, but I don't think it's that many games.
Right.
Yeah, because you had to play a certain amount of matches in order to receive your medal.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So the answer to that question is, yeah, there is a sense that if you're not really part of it, you're kind of on the fringes. You feel left out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also avoid all the pressure, don't you, of the season itself, and you still get a trophy. So maybe it's the best place to be.
Yeah, and you're still getting your millions put in your bank account. Not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. Yeah. So Chelsea tied Burnley 2-2. There was, again, a very dodgy penalty in that one. I'm not sure. Mudrick, that warranted a penalty, put it that way. But still, they dropped points yet again. Fulham, Blades, that was a good game. Did you see the Rodrigo Muniz goal in injury time? Absolutely beautiful. Reminded me of that whole Mark Hughes game before.
That bicycle kick, like that was unbelievable.
Remember Mark Hughes did one similar, Craig, back in the late 80s for United? And whenever I think of Mark Hughes, I don't think of him managing or his brilliant player. I think of that goal for United. It was incredible. Sideways, scissor, volley. Ah, and this was just like that. It was this guy's in fire. 8 goals in 8 games, by the way. No one scored more goals in the Prem in 2024. So that was pretty decent. Almost getting through the games here. Then we'll go to commercial break. How about that? Thanks, Wonga, for the reminder. I would have forgotten. Everton lost. Ooh. They are winless in 12 games. That equals a Premier League record.
And did you see the way that they lost?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Solanke. 16th goal of the season. And they're going to find out this week how many more points they get deducted. There was a hearing last week. 3 more days of hearings. And as much as they were saying the right things and felt confident in their arguments, they could lose more points this week. And like winners in 12. I mean, that can't be a good room to be in right now, can it?
Mm-mm.
Jesus.
Did you see that own goal though?
Was that the winner? The own goal?
I don't know if it was the...
Oh yeah, Seamus Coleman. Yeah. Seamus Coleman. Yes, sorry. That's right. Just after Everton equalised. Right, mm-hmm. They just equalized. And then back the other way, Seamus Coleman, who's been the greatest servant of any club, I think, in the Premier League. It's quite a nice little Chester, wasn't it?
I mean, and then like the keeper doesn't come for it. You're not sure what he's doing and just off of his chest and into the goal. I was like, oh no, It's just nightmare fuel.
Yeah.
Felt so badly for him.
Where is the table at right now? Quick look here. Where is, are they back in the,
the clip of the weekend was the game up in Scotland with Hibs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was amazing.
Describe it for us.
Took his own free kick with the guy, his own players, what, 10 yards away, and just absolutely, like, he's trying to kick it 100 yards, and he flushes him right in the face, and then goes back toward, back past the guy who took the free kick, and hits another one of his own players in the face again.
Double sniper.
Yeah, it was like bowling alley.
It was crazy.
We've got to post that.
Yeah.
That was brilliant.
It was.
Should mention, by the way, Luton lost to Spurs 2-1 again. Again, they're up. How many times have they been up in a game and playing well, right? But the Sonny in the end scores. He's now the fifth all-time leading scorer for Spurs. Brilliant.
Wow. He's awesome.
I think we should move on from that game now before we get any mention of the shirt. Let's take a commercial break, shall we? And then we come back. We'll talk some Canada soccer and Kevin Blue's statements on Friday or Saturday, whenever it was.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What up, Primers? It's JC, that guy. Don't miss a second of Premier League action only on FuboTV. Subscribe at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. With Serie A, League One, and One Soccer 2, you can get it all at FuboTV.com/FootyPrime. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. Welcome back to Footy Prime. Amy Walsh, Jimmy Brennan, Jeff Cole, Craig Forrest, Dan Wong, and James Sharman. Saturday, watching games. Join myself, you know, nice Saturday, cup of tea, nice breakfast, and then boom, Canada soccer, drop another social post, this time from Kevin Blue, outlining the financial realities of the current predicament. It's fair to say, all the money they're losing, they lost, 4 million they expect to lose in 2024, and at this point, he just acknowledges the issue and how that can't continue under the current losses. They need to really boost annual revenues by between $10 and $12 million. Kevin Blue said he'd be transparent. Craig, didn't he, when he first got the job? Mm. So far, he's being very transparent. I think the fans appreciate this. It's nothing we didn't really know, given that that article came out from Rick Westhead a couple of weeks ago now. And we know the issues financially for Canada soccer, but did anything turn your head from that?
No, not really, except the fact that he's continuing to do what I think anybody in that position doing the right things, right thing would be doing, and that's communication with alumni, with people within the association, with potential coaches, with the CBA, CSB. He's got an awful lot on his plate. I did get a chance to talk to him last week. I know we've all had a chance, Jimmy and Dubs as well. He's a pretty impressive guy, and he knows what he has to deal with, and he knows that communication is a big one to make sure that they sit down with the players, both sides, the men and the women, and figure out what's going on and make sure that some of this misinformation that I think that they've been given is cleared up.
Yeah.
That's the first thing he's got to do.
I like him, and I like his approach. And the one thing that I like is that he said, you know, there's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of people talking. And he goes, and I want to stop all this, all the nonsense of people pretending that they know what's going on. And he goes, when you hear me speak, I'm telling you exactly what's happening. And I would be totally transparent. So anything coming from my mouth is 100% accurate. And whatever you're hearing from on the outside, take it with a grain of salt. And I like that. And he's been true to his word so far. He's putting everything out there and he's being honest and upfront. And I like that. I love that approach.
I think the fact that he comes from somewhere else in many ways helps him. Like he's not a soccer guy and originally a football guy, and he's going to learn that side of things. But I think the fact that he's coming from another, you know, Golf Canada and something completely different, it almost helps him. And I think people listen to him because like, hey, I'm having a look at this. I'm going to be open. I'm going to be transparent. This is a situation. This is not sustainable. These are the things I need to do. Boom, 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 boom. And he's doing them and his days are busy.
At the same time, though, we need to get answers at some point, right? He's new in the job. When he starts getting answers and we hear from him, that'll be the really interesting part, I think, Dubs. He says that he's got two proposals on the table regarding increase in registrations, licensing, which I think will be voted on at the AGM in May. He's mm-hmm. going to meet with CSB shortly as well. There'll be interesting meetings as well. What was your take from the statement?
I don't know if I have a whole lot to add other than what Jimmy and Forrest said. I think that, you know, for the registration fees, I don't think they've been raised since 2019. So I
think it's 17, wasn't it?
Okay. Yeah.
I think it was 17.
Okay. 17. So it's time to do that. I mean, remember the last time that was attempted, Bontis ended up resigning, right? So I don't think we'll see a similar result there, but I think it's time to raise them a little bit, at least to reflect inflation. But Forrest, what you said, I think coming from a different space, coming from Golf Canada, I tend to agree with you that gives him a different perspective and it allows him to kind of pull from different approaches and experiences. But I think that he's in for a little bit of a reality check because his wanting to create an engine to drive revenue into Canada soccer. He's talked about, the sponsorship engine and he's talked about the philanthropy engine. And coming from the NCAA and coming from alumni associations and coming from that world myself or having lived it, being in Nebraska, JP went to Princeton and he still gets like the flyers quarterly saying, you know, give to the alumni association. Like Canada just does not have the same amount of money that the US does. We just don't have it. So this philanthropy sector that he wants to start, where are you getting all that money from? Like, I mean, there might be individuals like your Greg Kerfoots, but those are the outliers. You know, you're not going to be able to create a foundation of people like that in order to create this robust sector of revenue. So I hope that I'm wrong, but I think that he's going to find that there's not a tremendous amount of money to mine in this country, for people to fund sport. And our government does not fund sports the way that it should. I mean, across the board, our NSOs are drowning because they're poorly run, because there's a culture of abuse, they're broken, but they don't get the proper amount of funding from our government. So, you know, we're at a point right now where I think he's going to realize that there's not, you know, you can't, what's the expression? You can't get blood from a stone. Like he's not going to be able to find that money. Like, I'm not sure where it's going to come from.
Do you think the government will be obligated to up funding with a World Cup on the horizon? The world's watching, right? At this point, mm-hmm. Got to appetize your country, your sporting culture. And like you said, right now it's broken. So many regards. Mm. Is there a way that the government can step in here?
From the political side of things, the government will do whatever they think they can get votes for, what the people think that is going to be a positive outcome for them, regardless of whether it's right or wrong or not.
Election 2026, right?
Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, I think there's probably more negativity about for a politician around the World Cup and with the expectations of certain losses and whatnot. I'm not sure they would. They're going to step up and do anything, to be honest with you.
And there should be some legacy funding from FIFA as well. And then another aspect of his announcement there was that Canada Soccer will be directing funding towards the launch of Project 8, which it also did for CPL. So it continues to earmark funds for CPL. And then CPL also receives money from a FIFA program, I believe, FIFA Forward program, which creates opportunities for Canadian players for their domestic football. So, I mean, is that, you know, something that's, that should be acknowledged? I mean, in terms of like, oh, like look what they're doing for Project 8. I just think that this is something that they should be doing because, finally a domestic women's pro league is coming. So, you know, your association should be funding it in some regard because it's doing the same for, its male component, right? But I mean, it's being held out as like, oh, this is terrific. Look what they're doing. But this should be something that is part of their mandate.
Yeah, Project 8 was born because there was no backing, right? Mm-hmm. And no progressive approach for women's soccer in this country. That's why they started Project 8. So it's great that Canada's jumping aboard now. It's fantastic, but it's kind of late in some regards, isn't it? I guess they're seeing the writing on the wall. Like, this is actually going to be something that could work. Let's get involved now. And listen, it's a new leadership group, right? So they can say that. Listen, that wasn't us.
Charms, can I ask, did Kevin Blue reach out to you yet?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
JC, has Kevin Blue reached out to you yet?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay. So that's four out of the six of us, Kevin.
He asked JC if he was interested in the full-time position at JC, and JC apparently turned it down.
I had, you know, I was flattered. I've got things. I got other things going on, you know. So, but thanks again, K-Man. Appreciate you.
K-Man. He's pretty tight. K-Man. Yeah, no, look, yeah, listen. It's early days, isn't it? So it's going to be interesting where the money comes from. Yeah. CSB have been saying for a long time the money isn't there. Well, they still also acknowledge they need to rework that deal. And so does Kevin Blue. So I don't know how it looks. But subscriptions, I mean, how much are you talking here? Like, what are they right now for the average player? I know it goes beyond just player subs. I know that. What is it right now?
I think it's $9.
Is it $9? Right. And there's, what, over a million registered? That used to be the number that's thrown around. Not sure if it still is. So you can get a fair amount. 800,000, is it? Yeah, okay.
Something like that.
So there's a there's opportunity, but it's also genders at play, right? Every level of football and the provincial level, club level. So that's not, it's not definitely something that will be passed at the AGM. I think in the past, right, Jimmy, it failed, right? They tried to push for it, and it was voted down.
Well, it's not as easy as what you think it is, because it's got to get voted, and that discussion will be with the provincial bodies, and then it'll go down to the regional bodies and then to the local organizations. So it's a lot of people and a lot of weeds you've got to go through in order to make something happen, especially when it has to get voted.
A lot of weed should be smoked before voting.
Craig Forrest should be on that committee. Yeah. The navigation committee for that.
Need a cannabis company to sponsor, right?
Well, you know, the problem is too, like, even with your local local organization, anything that you want to get passed has to go through the board, okay? And for instance, you always get a divide with the local clubs within that board, because the people that are involved with the house league programs, recreational, and the people that are involved in the competitive side, a lot of the times they don't see eye to eye. Because the competitive side are the ones really that would end up supporting the pro teams, would end up supporting the national team, because that is kind of their pathway. And those individuals that play the competitive side don't mind spending that little bit of extra money because they know it's going to the future of the game and it's helping their kids out. The recreational side now is that people are paying just for their kids to go play once a week. They don't really care about the game. They don't care about the national team program. And I'm not saying everybody, but the majority of them don't. They're just to have fun. So when you're asking for more money in that the house league programs, and you're saying, well, this money now is going to go a little bit to the competitive, it's going to go to the national team, then you always tend to get a problem and an issue, because they're going, well, we don't care about that, so why am I paying for it, and why do I have to fund this? And that's where a lot of the divides are with the local clubs, is the house league and the competitive programs, because they don't see eye to eye.
Like you and your mic.
There's a lot of pressure and like you say, weeds to get through to get 50 cents more out of our people. So it's
100%.
It's not going to solve our problem, all our problems either. Yeah. But it is a step to.
But hopefully they can manage it and they can work through it and get the money that they're looking for.
What's so much contingent?
Go ahead. Sorry, what was that old? You can't squeeze blood out of common feces. Was that what it
was? Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
That's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, unless you're really sick.
There's a lot of fecal matter flying around Wonger's head today.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot. No, but so much obviously involves the labor dispute as well, right? And what the players' demands will be, how much they want, because there isn't a ton of money in Canadian football, and if they want a lot of it, it's less elsewhere. So, so many levels here to play with. Do you see? I saw a report on Twitter just before I came on today about Valor and Pacific being up for sale in CPL, which is interesting. Is it a concern? I don't know. There's foreign investment interested. We saw that with York, of course, and the acquisition a few months ago. Also, Pacific is also owned by the Vancouver owners, right? Which isn't ideal. So it kind of makes sense that at some point that would be sold. But we'll keep an eye on that one. Any thoughts on that, anyone, before we move on here?
I find it's a little bit strange. I mean, they go and expand and get Vancouver involved, and now they want to sell Pacific?
Yeah. I don't know. Can't comment. No knowledge on that at all.
No, we don't. But, you know, it's a little bit worrisome as well. I think, you know, when you never want to hear that with teams getting sold, or, you know, especially after, what, 5-6 years, leagues being so young, you've already had Edmonton that's folded. Now Valor's kind of up for sale. Pacific's up for sale. York was up for sale as well. Unfortunately, they had a great ownership group that's come in and bought it. But I'm sure behind the scenes, everyone at the CPL will be working tremendously hard to make sure that they get the right owners to come in, buy these clubs, and keep the league going in the direction that they want.
I think it's important to note as well that it doesn't mean that they're going anywhere, that they're in danger of disappearing the way that Edmonton did, right? It just means that they're looking for different ownership.
Yeah, and the league's willing to take ownership, take control of a club in the short term, as we saw with York, to make sure they find that right owner. So, and Valor's been mentioned before. This isn't news. The same, I think they're owned by the same owners as the Blue Bombers. Right? Yeah. Yeah, so. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that one. Certainly. And CPL kicks off on the 13th, so a week this Saturday. And we will be doing a special CPL show getting set for the new season. Got some names from the CPL involved and signed up for that. Our Tony bet of the week, parlay of the week, it didn't come through. Nor did the supporters, by the way. Chelsea let everyone down. So another week goes.
Wow. Another wow. Loss. Remember I referred to that pick as a wow and you guys gave me shit?
Well, no, you didn't refer to a draw, though. It was a draw.
No, I know, but it was choosing Chelsea is not a great bet. And I do have to say I did choose the Arsenal City draw, so thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Pat yourself in the back anymore, Wonga? After getting us sued?
It should also be noted that my pick, which was a point of contention because I went against Jimmy's Bristol City and we got into it a little bit, will only be played on April 14th.
It doesn't matter now, though, does it?
It doesn't matter now.
It's match day 5, and I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about the Conti Cup, which Arsenal won, by the way.
The what cup?
Conti.
Oh, I'm sorry. Excuse me?
What is that?
The Kenty Cup.
My favorite.
That's the League Cup, essentially, right? It's the League Cup, isn't it? Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So for the
not to be confused with the Diva Cup.
Yeah, exactly. They all might use the Diva Cup, but it's all 24 teams from the Championship and the Women's Super League participate. And so Arsenal played Chelsea and Arsenal won.
They did. Although, who was it who collapsed on the pitch?
I don't know.
You didn't see that?
No.
Oh, I've got a player collapsed on the pitch in injury time.
Oh, dear.
She's in stable condition, thankfully.
But was a heart issue again?
I didn't see the update this morning.
I didn't see it.
I had heard.
Yeah, it was Arsenal's Manum.
Oh.
So Frida Manum is conscious and in stable condition after collapsing to the ground
in the 95th minute of the Conti Cup final against Chelsea on Sunday. Norwegian international.
That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it freaks me out as well. It seems to be seeing more and more of it. Am I wrong? It just seems that way.
More broadcasting of games? Is that the difference?
Maybe that's what it is.
Or is it happening more? I know, I'm just...
It's just more visibility accorded to it happening, and it was always happening. It could be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was Footy Prime. Someone's calling me. Likely spam. What a surprise. Thank God. No one calls me anymore. It's just spam. Anyway, that's Footy Prime. Our thanks to FuboTV.com and Tony Bett, of course. We're back later this week with a whole crap load of MLS. Three questions for Montreal, TFC, and Vancouver, who are flying the flag after TFC and Montreal both blew it this weekend. Hey, Jeff Cole's calling me now.
We didn't talk MLS at all.
I know we have shows, and it's an hour and 2 minutes in. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, if Toronto FC won, you would have talked about it, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. So biased towards TFC. Yeah. And good for Vancouver.
Yeah, they got the first home win of the season. They needed that.
Vanny back on the sidelines. Was he Ray Carter? Craig?
Hey, James. It's me, JC. We're just doing the end of the show, and I know you mentioned that no one calls you anymore, so I just thought I'd give you a shout. Leave a message, and love you, buddy. Glad that rash cleared up. I got more ointment if you need it. Okay, cheers, homie.
Oh, sorry, did you guys, I got a voicemail. Look forward to hearing that later on.
Did you guys see what Vanny said after that game? So he's brilliant, right? So he said, if the first half was a city, it was Florence. If it was a person, it was my wife. If it was an idea, it was socialism. And that was Vanny Sartini on the Whitecaps' strong first half versus Portland. I love him.
Not since Jimmy Brennan coached York United, I've had such great post-game quotes.
Right?
That's amazing. That is amazing. Wow. That's up there with the best, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into some of that on Wednesday. We're hoping we may have a guest, as well as Asa Raymond, may have a guest on the Vancouver Three Questions as well this week, Craig. We're working on it.
You've been teasing that for a couple of weeks now.
I know. It's hard to nail these people down.
Yep.
No Easter reference there, I promise. No, which wasn't so difficult. All right, it's Footy Prime. Go now. Our last show ever. Bye.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by FuboTV and by Tony Bett. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @Footy_Prime and on Instagram at @FootyPrimeIG. And visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.
Be fun.
And there we have it.
All right. Great show. Have a wonderful Easter holiday.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.